Hello, I'm Joshua.
And I'm Mary. Welcome to From the Heart.
Orlando is widely known for its tourist spots and attractions, but many people don't know about its thriving arts community.
We are happy to introduce to you talented artists and passionate leaders whose ideas are shaping our arts community. How do they create and why? And how will Orlando prosper from our growing arts presence?
On each episode, we'll meet guests who are influential leaders and artists who are truly making a difference.
From the Heart.
Well, hello, Mary.
Hello, Joshua.
It's so great to be back in the studio with you again.
You're here.
We had a couple weeks off because I got to go traveling.
Yes, you went everywhere.
I feel like I did. I feel like I'm still moving. That's what I think. I was on every mode of transportation possible, from a ship to an airplane to a taxi. So I feel like I'm still moving. But yeah,
no, it was, train, because that was a movie.
I did a train as well. Wow. I mean, I guess a subway is a train, right? I mean,
it's close enough.
Train-ish. Yeah, it was great. I got to go up to Alaska and see the beautiful sights up there, and then I went to Vancouver for a couple of days, Canada. So it was great to spend a couple of days in our neighbor to the north. And then I was in San Francisco, and in San Francisco, I was actually on a grant trip for the Winter Park Health Foundation as we're studying programming for healthy aging adults, creative and innovative programming to do with some of our visual arts partners here in Orlando. So we were studying an organization out there named StageBridge that's been doing it for 42 years in the San Francisco, Oakland area, and just really seeing what are they offering to the community and how they're doing that and the way they sustain it. And so it was just fantastic to hear.
Do they provide opportunities for artists to do their art, or do they do art therapy?
No, it's all about giving people 60 and above the opportunity to kind of find that third place or that life after retirement. And they do classes and workshops and summer camps and everything from playwriting to playback theater to improv. Hmm. They have a vaudeville troupe, and they go out and they experience it through classes and performances, but then they go out and do it in the community as outreach, kind of like what we do with our charity partners. But they also have a really cool program about storytelling with low or at-risk students the Oakland and San Francisco area, where they partner up these 70, 80, sometimes 90-year-old wonderful human beings and storytell with these students who are at risk about their journey and about their life and their challenges and how they've made it to who they are today. So it's just really, really cool. So we're hoping to bring that to the Central Florida area.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
Making a vacation into something where you learn something.
13 days, so I'm ready to be back.
While you were in Alaska and Vancouver, I went to Polk County and Kissimmee and the mall.
Hey, Polk County's awesome.
No, it was fun. I'm not making fun of anyone's township. It wasn't as exciting as Canada.
Yeah, what did you do in Polk County, though?
Well, actually, I was driving through it on my way to Sarasota to visit my folks.
You waved at Polk County.
I got gas.
You waved at Polk County.
But I did read something that I wanted to bring in, since we deal with the arts. And this was a quote from Taking Fun Home to Orlando for Catharsis on Stage and Off. It was an article that was written that I just thought was really beautiful. It was put in the Orlando Sentinel by Michael Severus. So this is the quote that I like that he put in. It's something that we spoke about. And I'm going to say, in murky, frightening times like these, theater offers an audience a brief community, connecting us to one another in larger, lasting ways, and stories that say different things to us, depending on the time and what we need to hear, as a way to make the darkness outside our circle seem penetrable.
Mm, that's beautiful.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, and so applicable to everything that's been happening in our community, for sure. I know we've talked about this a lot, Mary, on this show, but I know we are both so proud of the artistic community that has just risen during this dark time here in Orlando. And that poem, is it a poem? I mean,
no,
is it
was
just
an article about, well, when Fun Home came here, but the fact that they came here because we needed it,
yeah,
and that's why they came.
Mm-hmm.
But more than because when you can share an experience with humanity, these strangers, they're not strangers anymore.
Yeah.
And we are social beings. And I think that what I like about what he wrote is how theater isn't just an art form to entertain, it's also one to heal. Mm. And that's what all the arts are.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And that has been so true, from instrumentalists to visual artists to dancers to the theater community. And now even the opera community is putting on a benefit concert. And it's all about, bringing healing and bringing awareness to what's happened in this community. I hope it will be a shining example if, unfortunately, any other community has to ever go through something like this again. I hope the arts can lead the way in the healing.
Well,
I know
sure
it has
did
here.
This time. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Which kind of is a good segue to our guest.
Yeah,
today.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you why I say that when you mentioned healing. Years ago, and this guest knows that I love this about him, one of the things that he's been voted, many things, was our spiritual leader of Orlando back in the day. I don't remember what year it is, but I love that because to me, I think that's one of the coolest things you could be thought of as. Hello, Michael Wanzi.
Hey, Mary.
Michael, Josh. It's so great to have you. I was telling Greg, our intern and our associate who works with us, I was like, Michael is just kind of the king of theater around here. I mean, really, truly. And Michael, you know, I've known and admired your work for several years now, but I don't think I knew the depth of what you've done in this community until we ask you to write the opening to the tribute concert that mm-hmm. the artistic community, one of them that was produced, and you sent back your bio of all the things you had done. And I was like, how in the world does one person do all of those things in one lifetime? And it was just, it was amazing. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping we get to talk about a lot of that today.
Mostly
on the show.
By being unemployed a lot of the time. It's very helpful to making yourself available for volunteers.
Well, if that's the key, then all of you go lose your jobs and create great things like Michael.
Michael, what excites me most is we have an entire show with you, which makes me really happy. And before we get into so much of what you've done and what you will be doing, I would love to have our listeners listen to a little bit of your journey that brought you to Orlando. I was telling you earlier, I read that you've lived in Connecticut and in Utah and in Germany and New York City. Tell us where you started, when you got here, and what your journey's been like. We're just going to sit back and listen.
Well, I'm from Connecticut, born and raised in a little town called Shelton, but I will always consider Orlando home. And the other places you mentioned that I lived were for very brief periods of time, and I always could not wait to get back here. But I was raised in a very, very middle-class to lower-middle-class neighborhood in a working-class town where people worked in factories or on farms. And my dad was in construction. He was also a firefighter. It was a sports-crazy town. And the entire city treated our high school football team as though it was the NFL. And I just didn't fit. I'm also blind in one eye, so I have no depth perception. But that was like never really explained to me when I was a child. So I didn't know why I couldn't catch a ball or couldn't aim at anything. And so I just thought I was inept. And I had dyslexia. I still suffer from dyslexia terribly, which also was not diagnosed when I was young. And so I just thought I was stupid. And I didn't fit in anywhere. And didn't get along with my father or my brothers, and it was just not a good situation in a lot of ways. And I couldn't wait to get out, and I wasn't exactly sure why. I knew there was something more at the root of it, which of course was because that I was a fag, but I didn't know that either because I'd never heard the word homosexual. I didn't know what that meant. I was raised Catholic. I went to a parochial school, so the thought that I could be attracted to another man could not even be allowed to enter it into my head, even though it was happening. So I just needed to get out. And a few days after my 17th birthday, I got on an Eastern Airlines plane with about $70 in my pocket and my 10-speed bike in a box. And I came to Orlando where I knew absolutely no one so that I could go to work at Disney World because I wanted to be a Jungle Cruise skipper and shoot shoot hippos and do that spiel. And because I heard that Disney had a theater workshop and there was no theater program in my high school. Never even heard of the Thespian Society until I got to Florida.
If you're just tuning in, we're listening to Michael Wanzi on From the Heart, hearing all about Michael's coming to Orlando here on 107.7. Please go on.
Well, so I came to work at Disney and they had a theater workshop, which was for the employees to get together and do shows for other cast members that night after the park was closed. And we did our shows primarily in the Diamond Horseshoe Theater in Frontierland at night after the park was closed. And I did one in the Ballroom of the Americas at the Contemporary. I did another one on the Fantasy Fair stage. But so that was how I got started in theater. Not how I got started in show business. That happened because my father would beat the crap out of me if I didn't want to eat what my mother cooked for dinner. And that became such an issue that finally it was decided I didn't have to eat what she cooked. But if I didn't, I couldn't eat anything at all. And so I was about six, and I would walk down the path through the woods to the hot dog stand, Lenny's hot dog stand, and Mr. Fogg, who owned it, thought I was adorable. He would stand me up on the counter, and I would do imitations of Crazy Guggenheim, the character that Jackie Gleason did on his show. And I had a an old trumpet that I didn't know how to play, but I would blow into it and make some noise. And I had a handkerchief, and I would wipe my forehead, and I did an impersonation of Louis Armstrong, and then he would feed me. So that,
serious?
That, wow. Yes.
Let's hear, can we hear one real quick?
Yes. Oh, no, no.
Serious?
Hello, Johnny.
That's awesome. Jason would love that.
I love it. That's so funny.
Anyway, so the first audition I went to at the Disney Theater Workshop was I got the role I wanted. It was Toto in The Wizard of Diz, a parrot. The company used to do an annual satire. And I did Toto, who spoke aloud as a dog, a wisecracking dog in The Wizard of Diz, and I was hooked. Lillian Disney came from California to see that show. She drove up in a limousine right to the front of the Diamond Horseshoe.
Did you meet her?
I did.
What was she like?
Literally in a reception line,
yes,
type
still,
of thing. But
wow.
At the time, Card Walker, who ran Disney, you know, was there, and I've met and talked to him many times. They really, really were very covetous of the theater workshop and gave it every consideration. So you were like this community theater group with the power of Disney behind you to provide costumes, sets, lighting, musicians. It was just kind of fabulous.
Mm.
And so that's where I got started. But then it became painfully clear that I was never going to get a leading role in anything because I can't sing to save my life. And I wasn't particularly handsome. And I had a lisp. I mean, this is what you hear now is after 4.5 years of speech therapy. So there was no way I was ever going to get a role of any great consequence in anything. And so that's when I started writing plays so I could write parts for myself to be.
And how, by the time you started writing plays, one, what was the first play you wrote, and how old were you?
The first play I wrote wasn't wholly original because it used Broadway songs, and it was called Curtains, and I wrote it for the Disney Theater Workshop,
mm-hmm.
For the Bicentennial Arts Celebration in 76.
Okay.
And then the first play I wrote wholly for myself was around, I think it might have been produced in 81 or 82. It was called David's Time.
David's Time.
And it was pretty much based on my own experience, and it was about being raised Catholic and having to come to terms with being gay. And it got incredible attention in the press, not because it was any good, but because it was constantly being booted out of places. I would rent a place to do the show, and then when they would discover the content, they would not allow the show to go on.
Orlando has sure changed, yes. Hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was denied. We were literally thrown out of what was then the Civic Theater, which is now the Orlando Rep. It was supposed to be done there, thrown out. And we were also thrown out of the Performing Arts Center at Valencia East Campus.
Wow.
Once they found out the content.
Well, yeah. My how times have changed nowadays, and thankfully they have. I have two quick questions. Did you ever get to be the Jungle Cruise skipper? Did you?
I did, but not, almost a year after I got here, I was in my third and final day of Disney training back in the days when traditions used to be 3 days long.
Uh-huh.
And someone came in and called my name and brought me out of the room and just said, "We're very sorry, but you can't work here." And it was because of my vision. I had not lied on my application. I put what my vision was, and I don't see out of one eye. And they hired me anyway, and I moved here. I ran away from home because of the job offer. So I had to go to a board of arbitrations, and they said, you know, the kid made a life-changing move based on a job offer. You can't deny him the employment. He didn't lie on his application. So I've had a tumultuous relationship with Disney ever since the beginning, a love-hate relationship. Because, and then they would not allow me ever to transfer.
So you never got to do the skipper?
I did. I did for almost 2 years.
For almost 2 years.
But they would never allow me to transfer into the entertainment division because of my vision. So
okay. Obviously, a lot transpired that made you who you are, and we're so glad you are. So we can't wait to hear more about that. But this brings us to the end of this particular segment. However, we're coming right back, and we want to thank all of you. You're listening to 107.7 FM From the Heart with Joshua Vickery, Mary Thompson Hunt, and our special guest, Michael Wanzi. Please come back. We'll be right back. Welcome back to From the Heart. I'm Mary Thompson Hunt here with Joshua Vickery, my brilliant co-host. And we're talking with Michael Wanzi today about Michael's life, how he got to Orlando and what he's doing. And eventually we'll hear what he's up to in the future. But right now, Michael, you were telling us a little bit about how you left Walt Disney World. You didn't actually have a chance to be there as long as you thought you would. Go ahead and take it from there.
Right. So I was actually fired.
We didn't get to that part. What happened?
Well, the person who was responsible for missing on my application that I was blind in one eye was very nervous that he would lose his job if ever anything happened with a guest and I was involved. He fought my getting hired very bitterly. And so he was keeping an eye on me at every turn. And there was a tradition that at the end of the summer, you would spray all the people who were only here for the summer with a fire extinguisher on their last day on the Jungle Cruise, a water one, not a chemical one or anything. And it was held over from Disneyland, where they still do it till this day. And I was one of 13 people that day who fired the fire extinguisher, but I was the only one who was fired for it. It was a standard accepted tradition that nobody cared about, except it gave them a reason to get rid of me and get rid of the insurance liability. So that was the end of my
career. How old were you then, Michael?
18.
Wow, just getting started.
Or 19, I guess, yeah, but when I was let go.
And you said you ran away to come down here. Did your parents know where you were?
My parents, I had concocted the most fantastical story with fake documents, the whole nine yards. And my parents and my school system were convinced that I had been accepted into a high school work experience summer program at Disney. And because people got out of school earlier in the year down here, I had to leave before our school got out. And so my parents knew I was coming to Florida at Disney, but they thought I was coming back to go back to school again the next Labor Day. But I got down here and quickly moved around and then didn't tell them where I was living and just never went back home.
They never found you? Ever again?
Yeah, I went to my mom's funeral. No.
I'm glad I asked. I think you're kidding, yes?
No, she has since passed, and I did go to both the funerals. But no, once the school year had started and it was established I wasn't coming home, I eventually made contact with them and let them know where I was.
Thank
and
you.
We healed our relationships.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Thank you. I Mary keep my job
both,
here.
We're both sitting here with our jaws dropped. I love it.
But so I wrote that David's Time show, and you know, it was kicked out of theater after theater. And so finally, I went to the Parliament House, and this is like 1981, 82, and convinced them to let me do it there, which is not really where I wanted to do it because it was like preaching to the choir. I thought I had something to say, you know, my first play. I was a young playwright, and I had too much to say. I think it was like 3.5 hours long, and two intermissions, and ever since then, everyone assumes that everything I write is long, which is not true. But anyway, I went in and I made a deal with them that if they would give me the theater for free because I had no money. That if I put people in seats at a time when there wouldn't normally even be anyone at the Parliament House and they could sell them liquor, and, you know, if they rang X amount of dollars in liquor sales, then I wouldn't have to pay for the theater. And so that's how I got started and have been doing plays at the Parliament House now for about 35 years.
35 years.
Wow. Three sets of owners, yes.
Amazing. What's been your most successful Parliament experience?
The Ladies of Yellow Heights, which just crazy. It garnered some publicity because of its many touchstones to actual life in Orlando, and it was a very nostalgic laced piece. And the Sentinel did not only a review, but then a human interest story on it after it had run for 6 months about the senior citizens groups that were now coming on buses to come see it from travel companies and senior homes and assisted living places. It was crazy. It was scheduled to run for 5 Saturdays, and it ran for 9 months of Saturdays.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
And for our guests listening who don't know what the Yola Heights, Ladies of Yola Heights are, will you give a brief synopsis?
It's basically a Southern Gothic bitch fest with a group of women coming back together to their family home in historic neighborhood of Yola Heights near Lake Yola. Excuse me, because their father has died. And they come back to find out that their brother is living his life as a cross-dressing, as a female who only speaks by means of lip syncing to songs that he plays through the surround sound. And you find out that it's all to deal with the fact that they've all been abused by the father, and they're the family splintered because of the familiar abuse, and then you discover that there is no funeral to be planned because the matriarch who stayed behind has already had him cremated and then threw the ashes in a dumpster out behind the Orange Motor Court where Daddy used to meet up with his whores. And so they decide to have a funeral of their own, and they put a soup pot on the kitchen table, and they all put in their pictures that they have of their father and burn them, and everyone lives happily ever after. But it ran for 9 months.
Wow.
And so I started writing sequels, and now I've written 5 of them.
I just saw your latest one. And it's the first one I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And what I loved about it was just like your story that you just told, is that as funny as it was, there were moments when I cried.
Yeah.
There was such like hysterical, and then like, oh, they got me. And I applaud your writing because you really do kind of take us the gamut of emotions.
It is what I hope I've sort of established as my writing style. I love to take people on a roller coaster of emotions and to infuse humor into highly sensitive and important topics in a way that make people not be uncomfortable about being around that topic. And one of the most wonderful things that have happened from that show is even when we were doing it with men in drag playing the women, which is just incongruous when you think about it, but now we do it with real women. But there would be actual women waiting for us when we came out of the dressing room. Almost every show, at least one woman, sometimes two, sometimes three, saying that they were victims of abuse by their father, and that it was the first time in their life they had ever laughed in conjunction with it, that they thought they would get up and leave and then couldn't and stayed, and how happy they were that they saw the whole thing. We had three women one night together saying that their father's ashes were still in the brown paper bag that they got them in 15 years ago, and that after seeing the play, they were all going home and they were going to go together and throw them in a dumpster and close that chapter of their life and thank us for the closure.
Yeah, I think that's one of the beautiful things about theater and about live art is that it really allows people to bring to the surface things that sometimes seem taboo or sometimes seem like you can't talk about them. But when it's right there in front of you on stage, it helps you to understand that, yes, there are, even through the comedy, even through the fun, even through the drag, there are other people going through what I've been through, and it's okay to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to face it. It's okay to confront it. That's really powerful.
And in the audience, he helped them do that, and they came back and acknowledged that. That's sort of what I read at the beginning of the show. It helps people to kind of come to terms and to heal as a community.
Yeah. Michael, why did you go from men in drag to ladies? I'm just curious.
When I wrote it, specifically for a group of friends to do. And it just was in vogue at the time. Like you couldn't keep people from throwing money at you if you were going to do a show with men in drag playing roles rather than being drag queens. None of us are drag queens. I'm not a drag performer. I'm an actor. I just happen to play a female role in that original cast. And we just, quite frankly, we knew that commercially it would sell tickets. But while I was writing it, I was very, very careful. I had envisioned that I wanted this to be done, that it would be more poignant and more believable if it were being done by women and the only cross-dresser, and it would be the cross-dressing brother who, by virtue of the script, is meant to be a man. To be honest, when we switched to a female cast, 10 years after the fact, Beth Marshall took over the role that I originated, Pearl, and I told her on opening night of that show that it's not my intention that this ever be done again with men, and that as it journeys out and lives on, I will insist that it only be done by women, and that when I do the first female version, I want her to play that part. And 11 years later, she did.
She did, and she's great. You're listening to Magic Radio 107.7. We're here with Michael Wansley. Michael, we have someone here that knows a few things about you as well, and we're looking forward to hearing to our guest who's here
very
for the
nervous.
Second time, George
very
Wallace. Hi, George.
Yay, George. Welcome.
Welcome back.
Yeah, well, there's only a few radio stories I can tell about Michael Wansley. The rest you'll just have to catch me at a bar some night.
That's the After Dark version of the show. Yeah.
What's your favorite?
Actually, my favorite Michael Wanzi story is not theater related.
It's okay.
And it's
is that okay with you, Michael?
You sure.
We'll segue back.
Yeah, yeah. So
when did we meet?
Oh my gosh, Fringe. So 11 years ago.
Long before you were.
Long before, yeah. I was a volunteer. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Do you remember when you met? Was it just standing in line somewhere? Or?
No, I think I had seen his show, and then just by the virtue of, you know, going out and being involved in the community, Parliament House and mm-hmm. Fringe, I just kind of started hanging around in the same circle of people. And the next thing you knew, we were friends, and now we vacation together.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's actually my favorite story.
Oh, right. No, what?
California. Michael Wanzi almost killed me.
I'm so excited to hear this story. I
a
have
vacation
no clue.
Story. Did you drive to California?
We drove from California to Las Vegas, but
we
you know,
flew to California.
We flew, and oh my God.
And we went on a Mickey Mouse emblazoned ride that we assumed was a family.
Generic Ferris wheel. And it was not. We've Mickey's coined it wheel Mickey's of Wheel of Death.
Is this in Vegas?
No, it was in California.
California Adventure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's modeled after the Wonder Wheel in Atlantic City. So the cars slide around on the track
yes.
while the Ferris wheel
oh,
is going
yeah.
around.
Oh, no.
And apparently mm-hmm. the more weight that is in the car, the mm-hmm. worse the ride is. And while you're standing in line, there's a roller coaster going behind you. And
people
when you
are
hear
going,
the, when you hear the screams, you think they're coming from the roller coaster, and you don't realize it's people on the damn Ferris wheel. and we got on, and we were the last car to load, so there was no easing into it. When we got on, it took off.
Oh, yeah.
There's no straps on it. You sit on benches facing each other.
And there are barf bags.
You see the size of George and myself. And I've lost a lot of weight since then. So I was even bigger then. And we had a gentleman with us who's bigger than me. And so we were probably the heaviest car that the ride had ever endured. And as it would go on this track and go around, that car would swing up so high that you actually felt like you were going to fall off your bench. There was no safety belt, and I don't even know till this day, like, I don't know how it is you don't fall off, but it got to the point where, like, I'm almost, like, right above George, ready to fall out of my seat on top of him.
Oh, my gosh.
We're all just screaming like women at a shoe sale, and I don't know how to explain it except that we never stopped screaming, and we're just so terrified because we had no prep for it. We didn't know that there was anything out of the ordinary about it. We thought we were getting on a sedentary ride.
And I'm not a religious man, but let me tell you, I was praying. I said, okay, here's the newsflash. George Wallace crushed by Michael Wanzi. it was crazy, but it was fun. And then we both have this affection for roadside attractions, and we went to the world's largest thermometer, and it was broken. Mm-hmm. And then we broke into an abandoned water park.
Rockahula Water Park.
Rockahula.
In the middle of the desert.
And what'd you do there?
Walked around. Examined things, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was fun.
Stood in front of a sign spray painted on the side of a building that said something I can't say.
Okay. Yeah,
and you two definitely bonded during this trip.
Yeah, and it was very inappropriate, and I actually used that picture as my Christmas card. So
in this segment's almost going to come to a close, but before we close, I want to hear you say something that you learned and fell in love with about Wanzi during that trip, and Wanzi, you two back to George.
I think just, you know, he's just a genuine person, so you instantly fall in love with Michael. I think the greatest joy in my life is when I see my friends happy, and when Wanzi's happy, I'm
the
happy.
Sweetest thing is what you wrote about the show 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
But what did I write?
From Broadway with Love.
Oh,
seeing me there.
Yeah, and honestly, my favorite thing about that entire show was looking at Michael and just seeing him float. He was in his element, and he was happy, and it just warmed the entire room.
Well, you brought up From Broadway with Love. When we come back, we're going to start by talking about that and your involvement and just what that love was all about from our community here. Thank you for being here, George. Michael, we'll be right back. From the Heart, 107.7.
Welcome back to From the Heart on Magic 107.7 FM. I'm Joshua Vickery with my beautiful and talented co-host, Mary Thompson Hunt. And we are sharing some fun stories about kind of one of the kings of theater here in Orlando, hearing his story and hearing about friendships and what's important. And we are so glad to have Michael Wanzi on the show today and his friend George Wallace, who we've had on the show several times. Actually, just once, but we feel like he's been around several times. But just been
feels
once.
Like 20.
Yeah, it feels like 20 from the Orlando Fringe Festival. And so welcome, guys. We're so glad you're both with us. And before we took the break, we were starting to talk about Broadway with Love. And we had Andrea Canny on the show, who kind of, I think maybe people heard about it first here because she was telling us right before the press release went out, and we were cheering it on all along the way, and I was out of town, but I just saw and heard great things about that concert. And Michael, tell us all about that, how it came to be, who was involved, how much money did you raise? What I know it was a huge impact on our community.
The guiding force behind the whole thing was my dear friend Kenny Howard, who spent some time in New York as a Broadway producer. He's got a Tony Award for Best Revival, Porgy and Bess, and so he has those connections, and so he almost like not even expecting that it would happen. He had been on the committee who did From Broadway with Love in relation to the Sandy Hook shooting. And that was an easy sell because the people only had to go, you know, 90 miles outside of New York City to get to Sandy Hook. And they could make the trip back and forth in a day. But to ask them to come to Orlando might be a very different thing. But so Kenny made a couple of calls, and one of them to our mutual friend, Seth Radetzky from Broadway Series.
We love Seth.
Radio, who I became friends with and had at the Parliament House twice. So there was that relationship. And they had just recorded the What the World Needs Now song, and they were performing that song on a new show shortly after Kenny called, the one that Martin Short is doing with I don't know, there's a show on with two SNL people now.
Well, I don't know,
Marty and Maya.
There you go.
Cool.
And so he was going to be with all those people that night, and he just said, well, I'll ask them. And they said yes, and then we were like, "Oh, well, now we have to actually do it." Yeah, and it was crazy. It was basically 3 weeks' notice, and it was not only to come up with the program, but the money had to be raised, or donations had to be in place to fly all these people here from Vegas, Los Angeles, most of them from New York. But you know, to speak to what you were saying earlier about doing things for the right reason. My favorite part about the whole experience was spending the day there for the rehearsals with the for the orchestra to learn everyone's song, because these were people just dripping in awards, Academy Awards and Tony Awards and Emmys and Grammys, and there wasn't an ego in the room. And no matter what they had to put up with, no matter what they had to endure, no matter what they were asked to do on the fly, when you see the DVD, there's all these group numbers, but none of them were planned. They happened in rehearsal with Seth or Michael Moritz, the musical director, saying, you know, this would be great if you would back up him, or you would do that. And they were just like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, I mean, I can't imagine it happening with like Hollywood people, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's
but
so
live
refreshing.
Theater people. And it was magical. I spent the whole day in tears just out of the generous hearts that were in the room. And then none of them are being paid. Most of them had to get on a plane and go right back because they had a show on Broadway that was running and they had to do a show the next day. And so they were in no obligation to do anything more than what they said they would do. And when we asked if they would consider coming to the Abbey after to meet the people from Pulse, they certainly weren't obligated to do so. So we just said, basically, when you walk out of the stage door, there's two limo buses. One is to take you back to your hotel, if that's your preference, and one to bring you to the Abbey. And when the bus pulled up to the Abbey and the doors opened, and literally every single one of them got off, and they came and they stayed and they did autographs and photographs and talked and hugged people and cried with people. And it was just beautiful.
It really was. I was actually had the privilege of going to the event and then the after party, and it was. I was sitting outside when the bus pulled up, and I'm just like, I was in awe. And normally I would be like, you know, taking pictures and stuff, but I was just like, it was just magical to see people come off that bus and cross the street and just give of their time. It was awesome.
83-year-old Gina Rivera, there from 10 o'clock in the morning, and she's at the after party at 1 in the morning.
Her dancing on stage blew me away. She
should have seen her at the party.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I never heard this story. I'm so glad.
Yeah, I didn't hear that part
all of
it
us
either.
Know that everybody went. That mm-hmm. I'm in tears. That's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
Why do both of you think it is that it's the artists that were the first responders here and the artists that would fly down here? What is it about our occupation that, in your mind, tells us we do that?
Well, art heals. I think I think it moves people, and I think I said it the last time I was on. It touches people in different ways. And I have to say, you know, I told Joyce and Kenny and Michael and Andrea and everyone that was involved. For me personally, that was the event that I felt was the catalyst for my own healing, because it was so magical and looking and reflecting, and it was just, I was in awe of the talent. And I didn't know some of the people that were performing that night, but, you know, I have a newfound love for each and every one. So, yeah, thank you, Michael, for being part of that and bringing that to Orlando, because you are a very big part of that.
Thank you, Michael.
It was Joyce Arbucias and Andrea Canny and Kenny Howard really did the bulk of the work on it, sincerely. And then Seth Radetzky and Michael Moritz and Van Dien, a producer from New York. But I have to say, I feel the same way about the event being a turning point for me. I think I feel like I was on automatic pilot since the shooting and running from one thing to the next. And I was honored to speak at the vigil that was held in Winter Garden. And it was a very scary thing because I was incredibly frank about how I thought people needed to look beyond their churches, if their churches were telling them that we're evil people. And I just hadn't stopped. And then that day, sitting there crying almost for every person who came on, and how sweet they were and how giving they were, and that it was my release. It was my release. I actually enjoyed the show because I had already spent all my tears at rehearsal, but
we're talking with Michael Wanzi and George Wallace here on From the Heart 107.7. What next for you, Michael and George, as a team? Were you going to do another roller coaster, another show?
I don't know. I need a vacation.
Now I look to George. I just spoke to George the other day to ask his advice about what I would put in for the Fringe lottery, because he is. I think, you know, I didn't get to say my nice thing about him after he said something nice about me, but not to do with the trip, but I'm always been amazed at, even during the festival, never do you see George running anywhere, acting like there's something a fire that needs to be put out, or that something is going to go awry if he can't get someplace. He seems to just almost be there as a participant or an attendee, yet he's responsible for what is one of the largest arts festivals in the United States of America, the longest running and most successful and largest fringe festival in this country. And he does it quietly and without drama. And I spent a lot of my life involved with people who create drama and not in a good way. And it's only been about 5 or 6 years ago that I've literally made a conscious decision that I'm just no longer going to associate with people on a regular basis who bring drama into my life, unless it's on stage and meant to be happening. And then I meet this guy who's like the glue that holds this thing together without ever an ounce of drama. And he mentioned being genuine, and that's what he is, and that's why he can get so much out of people, because people want to do what they can for him because he's genuine.
Mm. When you were a volunteer, you were so often voted. What did you tell us about?
I did. I won the Volunteer Excellence Award. So, yeah.
Didn't you also get something for your attitude, the spiritedness or something?
I got the Spirit of the Fringe.
The Spirit of the Fringe. Yeah. Let me ask you this question, because I think our artists listening, and even anyone out there who has a job listening, What is your secret to keeping that center and that balance when there's chaos around you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think surrounding yourself with people. I often get credited with, they say, oh, George runs the festival. I am a piece of the festival, and I may be the figurehead of the festival, but I have so many people that help me, and the artists too. They always chip in and they help. And the way I look at it is, thank you very much, Michael, but if I'm running around during the festival and there's chaos, then I haven't done my job.
Exactly.
I'm already planning things for next year. Mm-hmm. So I think just surrounding yourself with just good people.
George comes to my happy hour. I bartend once a week at the Parliament House on Tuesdays every week. And he's always walking in and he sits down and he gets a drink and then just casually starts talking about some incredibly wonderful, magnificent thing he's got planned that's going to be completely different than the year before, but just kind of comes out, you know, without any fanfare. And I just look at him and I think, when did you even have time to think about this? Let alone make all these plans.
Tuesdays.
Tuesdays.
Yeah. At the bar.
Tuesdays at the bar. Yeah, I actually get a lot done there. Yeah.
That's neat.
I think that's great advice for sure, George, because putting people around you, you know, that can help keep you centered and really pick up where you need them. I think that's incredible advice for anybody that's listening to the show tonight here on Sunday night, driving home, whether you, even if you love the arts or not, that's a great leadership advice, is to stay calm during the storm, put people around you that you trust and help keep you,
well, and
keep you safe.
Often in the arts, Joshua, I think because we're so director oriented and whatnot, it's oftentimes you find people who just cannot let go of having to have control over every tiny detail of something. And I think what George does so successfully is that he surrounds himself with people who he knows can do the job, and then he leaves them alone to do the job. He trusts that they're going to do the job he's hired them to do. He keeps a finger on it, but doesn't get all crazed up in the minutiae of what they're doing. And I think that just speaks to live theater also as being, I think, truly the most collaborative art form that there is. I mean, the most successful shows are the one where you trust the lighting designer, you trust the costume designer, you trust the music director, you trust and then you let those people come to the forefront and you take their counsel and their advice, and it's the end result the director gets the credit for, but it's, or maybe the writer, but it's an amazingly collaborative art form.
And speaking of art form, what's next for you artistically, Wanzi? What are you working on now?
Excuse me. Well, I can't even go into how it happened because I'm not even sure myself. But my life has taken a dramatic turn over this past year. I've gotten involved with a company called the Imagination House. They provide themed entertainment and entertainment concepts for theme parks and cruise lines all over the world, and I have been doing a great deal of writing for them on a smattering of different projects, and they're all fabulous people, fun to be around, great creative atmosphere, and they pay well and they pay on time, which is very
we love
unusual.
That
and so it's really turning my life around.
And
right,
you don't
now
have to have depth vision in both eyes.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Well, we're going to see great things to come from both of you men, and we're appreciative of all that you do in our arts community and how much you've done and will do. And you can check out more about all from Wanzi Productions on Wanzi.com, WANZIE.com. You can check out about the shows he's doing, about his movie reviews, which I think I might go to see a movie tonight, so I'm going to have to find out what I should go see.
Yeah. What should people
tomorrow
see this week, Wanzi?
Wait till tomorrow.
Oh, wait
you
till
have
tomorrow
to go see Meryl Streep's movie about, what's her name?
Florence
oh,
Foster.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
okay. And any live shows in town people should go
and
see?
And Peach Dragon opens tomorrow as well. live shows.
Well, I've got some. There's I Got a Man at Wayne Dench Performing Arts Center, and I Love My Wife at the Winter Park Playhouse.
Man
the Moonlight
of La Mancha.
Players is, yeah, Man of La Mancha is opening CFC Arts, and The Big Meal at Mad Cow Theater. So lots
of
big, fun theater out there.
Everyone who's seen The Big Meal has had nothing but rave things to say about it. And one of my favorite actors in town is in it, Stephen Lane.
Oh,
love
he's
it
fantastic.
Oh, he's great in everything he does. Well, there you go. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. I can't thank you, Michael Wanzi, for being here. What an honor. And you too, George Wallace, an honor as well. two of my favorite people to listen to on radio. Joshua, always a pleasure being with you.
Always a pleasure. An hour just flies by with you, Mary.
Too fast. You're my favorite radio co-host.
Hey, you're my favorite radio co-host. Oh, look at that.
Works.
Thanks for tuning in tonight. You've been listening to From the Heart on Magic 107.7 FM. We'll see you next week.